The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
At the start of last month, we heard from mountaineer Derek Mann, who's about to reach Antarctica to summit Mount Vincent. He wanted to be the seventh of the seven summits completed. He also wanted to be the 15th and oldest Irishman to complete that task. Did he succeed and get back in time for Christmas with the family? Well, the last time we spoke, he was close to the Antarctic in southern Chile at Puntas Arenas. But I'm looking at him now and he's back. Did you do it?
It did indeed, Pat, yes.
You got to the top?
We did, yeah.
And did you get back in time for Christmas?
We just about made it back, got back to Ireland on the 22nd of December. And it was really by sheer luck and a weather window that we were chasing.
Talk to me about the whole, from the last time we spoke and you were in Puntas Arenas,
yes,
and you were about to fly out to the Antarctic. What happened next?
We flew out. It was a 4.5 hour flight on a big Boeing 757, which carried more stock and materials and foodstuffs, etc., for the camps. So there was only 30 people on the plane. So you had the
and the rest was gear.
The rest was gear. Yeah. So it was. You know, you got your seat number, but you could have sat in any seat throughout the whole plane, which was a marvelous experience. Fully catered for. So we got teas, coffees, biscuits, that sort of stuff. 4.5 hours landed on Antarctica on the blue ice runway there, which was frightening in a way because I didn't really know what to expect.
You're landing on ice.
On blue ice, yes, indeed. Yeah, so like when the plane landed, it just behind the plane, I was just behind the wing and it just was just huge snowstorm behind us. So that was exhilarating in a way, but the flight in was just marvellous. You go from ocean, then you start seeing Antarctica and then it's just white ice after that. It's just spectacular. About an hour before we landed, we were told to change because we were expecting from the temperatures to go from Puntas Arenas, which was kind of plus 15, to open the door and you're into minus 10 or minus 15. Wow. So we were told to put on a lot of our gear because obviously it would be a massive shock to the system. So you had everything covered straight away.
And when the door opened and you're exiting into that cold air, I mean, is it really a shock to the system?
It really is a shock to the system. And, you know, you're walking out with very little skin showing as a starter. You know, as you walk around with all the gear you have on, you're beginning to warm up. So you're taking, you know, small layers off. But it's the brightness that really, really impacts you. You have either goggles on or your glasses on, which are imperative because the sunlight coming down off the snow and off the ice.
You get snow blindness.
Yeah, absolutely. You get it very quickly if you don't protect yourself. But it was such an experience.
This is phase one, safe landing on the blue ice.
Yes.
What next?
We were then transported onto Union Glacier, which is a small, if you want to call it a small little village. It just has a mess tent, toilets, showers, has a small library and a very small gym. So caters for staff that are looking after like all the incoming climbers, but also there's scientific experiments going on there as well. So it caters for them also.
How many people would climb Mount Vincent in a season?
There's only about 60 to 70 people would try and climb Mount Vincent in a season. There's only about 100 climbers go down on average per year.
Now you had done the six summits, so this was going to be your seventh and final summit. What's the degree of difficulty compared to, say, Everest?
Oh, Everest being, you know, if you want to rate it from 1 to 10, Everest would be a 10, given its altitude and cold and the death level on it, the mortality rate on it. Mount Vincent, there's 95% success rate on Mount Vincent. It's just a long slog. It's half the height of Everest at 4,892 metres. So it's not The element of difficulty and technical climate is very limited. Really,
therefore a shallower slope than Everest.
Yes,
so you're not going almost vertically upwards.
No, and there's only one stage where you're on fixed lines, and you're on fixed lines. They're called safety lines.
Yeah.
So you're attached to these. So you're climbing a vertical of about 45 degrees. That carries on. That goes from low camp to high camp, and you're on those fixed lines for about 3.5 hours. Which is very tough, given that you're carrying basically all your survival. So you're carrying tent, you're carrying all your food. So you're carrying a weight load of about 30, 35 kilos on your back, also while trying to drag yourself up through the fixed lines, which are about 45 degrees.
No Sherpas.
No Sherpas. No helpers.
So it's do it yourself
yes,
kind of
absolutely,
thing.
Yes, absolutely.
So then the beginning of the climb proper. Is that from the glacier? That glacier.
Yeah. Well, what happens when you arrive into Union Glacier? Then, if the weather permits, they basically fly you across the Elworth mountain range in this otter plane. It takes about 10 people, and it's just a fixed wing, twin prop plane. So that takes off, drops you over into Vincent Base Camp, where you stay for a day to acclimatise. And it's not really acclimatised to the height, but it's acclimatised to the weather. The low camp stands at 2,100 metres. It's kind of where you would normally ski from if you were up in the Alps or whatever. So you don't feel the altitude as much there at all. So from there, then we go to high camp. So that's where you walk up to the fixed lines, which is about a half an hour. And then when you're on the fixed lines, then it takes 3.5 hours to get
so
up.
So the toughest bit is the beginning. The fixed lines.
The fixed lines from low camp to high camp. That is the hardest part of it. That's the most treacherous because you're on those inclines. And
so you get to high camp. How high is that high camp?
High camp is at 2,750 metres. Now, at that stage, you're beginning to feel a little bit of the altitude because you're staying there for a number of days, or you're supposed to stay there for a number of days.
To acclimatise.
To acclimatise, yes. To both, obviously, the altitude and the cold also, because the higher you go up, the colder it's going to be.
And I presume to rest after that slog up.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And what happened was that the forecast we would get at 10 o'clock every morning in the mess tent, and the forecast was for bad weather to come in. So generally what we would do, we would move into high camp, you'd sleep overnight, rest that day, and then go for summit the following day. But because the weather was turning, we were asked all individually, look, if you feel up to, we'll go for summit today. So we had no rest day up there. And what was happening, it was, you know, going full circle, that if we got summit, we'd get back to Union Glacier a day early and give us the opportunity that if a flight did come in, that we could get home.
If the flight didn't come in, if the otter couldn't make it in, what then? You just hold up there for...
You have to just hold up. And that's really why, you know, you bring so much food with you. So they cater for about 2 weeks of if you want to call it, additional foodstuffs, oil and gas for the cookers, etc., etc. So you're always replenishing what you eat, and that's why the carry loads were so high.
Okay, so anyway, you decide we'll forego our day of rest because we want to get home for Christmas.
Yes.
So off you went. What was it like that day of summiting?
That morning was beautiful morning. There was a lot of wind previously when we were setting up tents at high camp. There was massive snowstorm come in, so we were trying to set up tents. That about 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning, the winds just died. So it was absolutely flat, calm, beautiful weather. When I say beautiful, it was kind of -20, -25 or so. But you know what I mean. You cater for all that. You know, as I always
say, your layers.
Yeah, your layers. And you know, there's no such thing as bad weather, as bad equipment. You know, so you have the best of stuff on. So we all decided, right, we will go for summit that day. Beautiful, calm day, blue sky. It was like the clarity. It was just fantastic. So we tracked then up through the mountains, and it undulates up towards until you get about 2.5, 3 hours from the summit.
It's a climb.
Is the climb really starts?
You're kind of going up, gaining a bit of altitude, then dropping again, and having to do it all.
Yes, exactly. And you know, you're looking ahead, and you can see one other German expedition that were ahead of us, and you could see them on the slopes, and they look miles away, but actually they're only about 30, 40 minutes away. So once those severe ascents were cleared, we all then got to the bottom of the summit. You take off your bag, anything you don't want to bring to the summit, you just leave. So your walking poles, that sort of stuff, you leave. You take out your ice axe because you're on very, very narrow, very steep ledges. Like there's thousands of feet below your feet, and there's only room for, you know, your feet on. It's exhilarating. And at one stage we stopped and you could see base camp. And it just like was a dot. That's all it was. And it was just...
It's not terrifying. I mean, you're saying it's exhilarating equals terrifying.
Yes. And, you know, it's a funny thing that, you know, in all I've done, but, you know, before this all started, I was actually petrified of heights. like we were only talking over the Christmas period when the family went to London and we went on the London Eye. I sat in the middle of it and I just was not able even to look out. But what I did was to get over that, I went ziplining on my own and just went through a day of ziplining. So that kind of got me over the fear, and that was really the mindset and the positive mindset.
But the confidence you have to have in your footwear and all the, I suppose there are some sort of spikes sticking out.
Yeah, you've crampons on.
Crampons on.
And then you have your ice axe as well. So as you're walking across these ridges, you're planting your ice axe in case there's a bit of a wobble, that you have that as some sort of safety. But when you're standing on that ridge and on the edge and you're looking down at base camp and it's like, it's 16,000 feet to base camp, you just stand there and just take it in. It's breathtaking.
There's no surviving that fall.
No.
No.
In and one word, no.
Confidence in your ice axe that it would hold you if the ledge gave way underneath you.
Well, yeah. No, they're well, if you want to call it the well-trodden pathways to the summit, they're on rock, but they're covered in ice, but they're there. So you kind of, you don't really question that they're going to fall. Okay. You just go, okay. And just keep yourself calm. Concentrate on what you're doing and then just follow the lead through and away you go.
And then when you got to the top, was it worth it?
Oh my God, it was unbelievably scenic if you think blue ice and snow and rock and then just melts into the, pardon the pun, but it just kind of it joins the skyline and you think that you're above the clouds, but actually all you're looking at on is Antarctica and it's just all ice with no clouds merging into blue landscape. Just amazing. I remember like when I got there, after completing the seven summits, and it took 12 years to do this between, life swerves and COVID, etc. I just sat on my bag and I just went, oh my God, it was just, it was, if you want to call it, you kind of get a bit emotional about it.
You're getting emotional. Yeah. Thinking about it. But to do it, the oldest Irishman to do it, yes, and to do it anyway, 15th. So few people have actually done the seven summits.
Yeah, very, very few. And it takes such a lot of time and a lot of passion, planning. You're committing to this. When I set out to do Elbrust back in 2012, this really wasn't on the radar. And when I summited Everest, and that was two, kind of really still wasn't on the radar till I did Kilimanjaro, and then, speaking with my guys at home, and then it was kind of...
There's only four left, yes.
It was, and it just went from there. And I said, look, if I can push on here, not come into any sort of major delays or difficulties or whatever the case may be, I might go on and do the seven summits. And when it happened then back in December, I was absolutely thrilled with myself.
And great understanding from your family, obviously.
Oh, absolutely, 100%.
They must worry all the time you're away in such hazardous situations.
Yeah, I know, I talk to them a lot about it, and they give me 100% support. Yeah. It's really good.
So I have to ask you now, what next?
What next is right?
Yeah. You told me, I think, in early December, this is it.
Yeah, for the big mountains, this is it, Pat, honest to God. I said to my wife, that this is it. And, I'm committing on national radio that, this is it. No more big mountains. And when I completed the seven summits, and emotional and what an achievement it was for me, and I was very proud of myself, it gets to the stage where you kind of go, you're getting tired of the sub-zero temperatures, the having to keep such a fitness level at such a level that I am at, and to keep that going and to still maintain, your knees and your joints and your hips and that sort of stuff. So I'm kind of looking towards the future now. So what is next? As one guy says, Mars must be next. And I said, no, well, let's do the moon first before we do Mars. But that won't be the case. But I'll continue on, remain fit. I'll continue on doing triathlons and, all being well towards the end of the year, I'd like to maybe do an Ironman.
Well, congratulations, Derek. Fantastic achievement to do the seven summits, one of only 15 Irish who've done it, and to be the oldest person to do it. Congratulations.
Thanks very much indeed. Brilliant. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.